Welcome to Breitbart News Daily. Thanks for being here. Talked a lot today about the college protest going on. Talked to Senator Tom Cotton. We'll play that for you in just a moment. But first, the first segment of the second hour, we talked about this Bill Maher clip, which is very fascinating. It is maybe the best example. It's hard to beat COVID. COVID's really the best example of Trump derangement syndrome. When Trump was, when Trump came out and said, hey, there's this thing, maybe a big deal, this virus in China. Oh, come on out to Chinatown. Don't be xenophobic. Bat soup's delicious. And then Trump said, maybe this COVID's not that big a deal. Oh, we got to shut it all down. So COVID's got to be the best example, but this is pretty good too. Right up there as well. That Trump did a thing on abortion and now the left is praising pro-lifers. Like, what? How did that happen? Here, we'll talk about it here. To Tom Cotton, who wants to call in the National Guard against these young people. I want to highlight a conversation we had yesterday with the number two Republican in the Arizona State House, the Speaker Pro Tem, about abortion in Arizona, which is going to be on the ballot coming up here, another abortion on the ballot in a swing state. This is a huge deal. This could determine the entire election. Real quick, before we get to that, let me quote Jesse Kelly. Have you followed the Christie Noem thing? Have you been following this? Here's what Jesse Kelly said. He said, by the way, if you're watching on the First TV, right after this show, we have a replay of the Jesse Kelly show, so you can watch that right after this show. He said the GOP cannot be the party of murdering dogs. If you want to be GOP, you got to stand for life. Unless it's a 12-week-old baby growing in its mother's wombs. In that case, screw the kid. We got an election to win. So Christie Noem, governor of South Dakota, on the VP shortlist, I guess. She has a book, No Going Back, The Truth and What's Wrong with Politics and How We Move America Forward. So The Guardian wrote about it. They said in 1952, as a Republican candidate for vice president, Richard Nixon stirred criticism by admitting receiving a dog, checkers, as a political gift. In 2012, the Republican presidential nominee, Mitt Romney, was pilloried for tying a dog, Seamus, to the roof of the family car for a cross-country trip. He didn't tie the dog. I think he put a kit or whatever. I don't know, like a kennel. What would you call it? Like a dog transporting device on top of the car. He didn't just tie the dog to the car. But in 2024, Christie Noem, the presumptive or a strong contender to be named running mate to Donald Trump, has managed to go one further by admitting killing a dog of her own. So here's what she wrote in the book. Cricket was a wire hair pointer, about 14 months old. She had an aggressive personality and needed to be trained to hunt pheasant. By taking Cricket on a pheasant hunt with older dogs, Noem says, she hoped to calm the young dog down and begin to teach her how to behave. Unfortunately, Cricket ruined the hunt, going, quote, out of her mind with excitement, chasing all the birds and having the time of her life. Noem describes calling Cricket, then using an electronic collar to attempt to bring her under control, and nothing worked. Then on the way home after the hunt, as Noem stopped to talk to a local family, Cricket escaped Noem's truck and attacked the family's chickens, grabbing one chicken at a time, crunching it to death with one bite, then dropping it to attack another. Cricket, the untrainable dog, Noem writes, behaved like a trained assassin. When Noem finally grabbed Cricket, she says, the dog whipped around to bite me. Then, as the chicken owners wept, Noem repeatedly apologized, wrote the shocked family a check for the price they asked, and helped them dispose of the carcasses littering the scene of the crime. Through it all, Noem says, Cricket was the picture of pure joy. I don't understand that. I hated that dog, Noem writes, adding that Cricket had proved herself untrainable, dangerous to anyone she came in contact with, and less than worthless as a hunting dog. At that moment, Noem says, I realized I had to put her down. Noem then led Cricket to a gravel pit. It wasn't a pleasant job, she said, but it had to be done. And after it was over, I realized another unpleasant job needed to be done. And I think that's a pivot to politics. I think that was the point of the story. Is look, she's willing to do the hard things. That's the line. It was not a pleasant job, but it had to be done. And after it was over, I realized another unpleasant job needed to be done. Run for governor, or whatever was the rest of that. So, a couple things. First of all, I bought Old Yeller for my son to read. I haven't read Old Yeller in 30 years. I just remember being super sad. Doesn't he shoot the dog? I don't want to give it away, but I think that's what happens at the end of Old Yeller, isn't it? I genuinely forget. All right, here's a couple things I've learned in my old age. First thing, people have no idea what it's like to live on a farm. And farmers and other people have a completely different relationship with animals from each other. Like, totally different world. Second thing I've learned, do not mess with people and dogs. You cannot touch that. You cannot touch dogs. People love dogs. You can't even say, hey, maybe you shouldn't bring your dog on this airplane. Forget it. I remember back in the day, dogs would fly underneath in the cargo hole. You'd put the dog, you'd like say goodbye to dog at the bag check, and the dog would go like through the conveyor belt and around, and you'd meet the dog at the on the other side. That's how we treated dogs not that long ago. And now everyone's bringing their dogs everywhere. You cannot say anything bad about dogs. Even now, I'm toeing the line. I made 2 viral videos in my day. I have two viral videos. I'm a content creator machine. The first one is I went to the gay pride parade in San Diego. And I asked people who said it. And they were quotes against gay marriage. And was it Rick Santorum or whatever? And it turns out they were all Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. And then I asked people, what percentage of people are gay? And everyone was like, I don't know, maybe 40%. It's like, what are you talking about? The other viral video I made is I went to a beach in San Diego and I asked people the hypothetical. I said, did I do a bus or drowning? I forget if I did a, I don't know which one I did. Let's just do drowning, but it's the same story. If a stranger and your dog are drowning and you can only save one, who would you save? You walk over this bridge and there's a stranger, a human being, and your dog. They're both drowning. You can only save one. Who do you save? And every single person said dog. So then I got more personal. It's like, okay, what if that's your cousin? What if your cousin's drowning or the dog? And it was still like 80% said dog. A couple of people were like, I like my cousin, so I'll save it. And then I was like, okay, what about your sister? And they're like, It was still like 50-50, dog, sit. Like, it was crazy. So I learned you cannot mess with people and their dogs. Also, people and their dogs look alike, but that's a different story. I cannot find this quote. I've tried looking for it 100 times. I know it's real. I know I've seen it before. If you can help me find it, that would be great. I think it was Caesar. I don't remember. I think it was Caesar. And the story is he saw 2 people from a foreign land come and visit. And these 2 women were they were carrying and doting over their dogs. And Caesar said something like, don't you have babies where you come from? What are you doing with, like, why are you treating these dogs like this? Don't you? And it was thousands of years ago. But anyway, the gist is, Christy, you cannot talk about dogs. You cannot say anything even remotely bad about a dog ever. You certainly cannot talk about killing a dog. You can't say anything about dogs. The famous quote that Trump said, where he says, I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and I wouldn't lose any voters. That is true, by the way. That's a true statement. Like, he said that and it is true. But it would not be true if he shot a dog on Fifth Avenue. If Donald Trump shot a human being on Fifth Avenue, who would not lose any voters. If Donald Trump shot a dog on Fifth Avenue, that's the end of it. Go to James in Tennessee, and then I'll pivot out of Christy Nome. There's a reason I went to Christy Nome. We'll pivot out here after James. Hey, James, how are you, man? Hey, James, you there?
Hey,
there you go.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. Sorry about that, brother.
Hello? Okay. Main thing was, here where I live in Tennessee, we have chickens, we have dogs, yes. If a dog kills your chickens, the dog now has a taste for chickens, it's going to start eating every chicken it sees. So you can't really let the dog live. Now, as opposed to, why don't they just take it to a shelter or something? Around here, we don't have a shelter. And to pivot off the thing, you know, there was a line in Game of Thrones, the hand that produces the, or pronounces the judgment has to swing the, has to swing the sword. She decided it needed to die, so she needed to do it herself. This is what a common thing is for dogs that kill chickens.
This is important to understand. This is important to understand. Common. You say common thing. So when you heard this story, were you appalled when you heard this story?
Because the way they present it, they said, oh, she shot a puppy. No, she shot a dog. A puppy is 8 weeks old. Yeah. A dog is, you know, 3 or 4 months old. If it's old enough you're taking it hunting, it's old enough to be a dog. And if you can't, if it gets away and tries to bite you especially, no. Mm. That dog is not a good dog.
Have you ever shot a dog, James?
Dogs, no. Cats, yes.
Wow, you've got to call the SPCA, ESP, whatever they are, on you. They're coming now, any minute now, James. Where are you in Tennessee?
It could be worse. My dad and his brothers, when they had a litter or something and they could not afford them because they grew up poor, around here, what they used to do is put them in a potato sack with a brick and throw them in the river.
Oh, I thought you say
now, you want cruel. That's cruel.
Yeah. Yeah. Where are you in Tennessee, James? What neck of the woods?
East Tennessee.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Back up in the mountains.
We're going camping in East Tennessee next weekend. It's beautiful out there.
We're at
Indian Boundary.
Okay, that's down toward Teleco.
That's right. Is that nice?
That's the famous snail darter is down there.
What's down there?
They had a dam that it was held up because there was this little fish called the snail darter. And that kept them from finishing the dam and closing it off because it was going to kill that fish.
Oh, come on. That sounds like a California thing. I don't appreciate that. That's like the Delta smelt in California. I don't like hearing that in Tennessee.
Right.
I don't have any time for that. Thing. Yeah, that ain't right. James, I appreciate the call, man. Thanks, brother. All right, so let's pivot out of Christy Nome. All right, just whatever. A little context to that. Killing dogs. Oh, real quick. Zach, what did Nolte say?
John Nolte, if you go to Breitbart.com, he's got an article that says Christy Nome shot her dog and political future in the head.
Yeah, that's about right. Because, Christy, you're not talking to James in Tennessee. James knows the story, and you don't need to – like, James gets it, and you don't need to tell James that you do hard things. Like, James is with you. You're not talking to James. Sorry, you got to know. You can't talk about dogs like that.
Because that's the kind of move that can only hurt you, right?
What's the upside of this?
Wow, yeah, there's no contingent of people who love shooting dogs.
What votes are you trying to get? No one is going to say, wow, she is a tough gal. Look at that. Look how tough she is. She can do that. She's right for this job, too. Like, that is just unwise. But anyway, killing dogs, not okay. Killing babies in the womb, well, it might win us some votes if we allow that. So we talked to one of the top Arizona Republicans, and it was really great to get the background on this abortion law. Here's the most important thing to know. Every time you hear the media talk about this, they talk about it, the 1864 law. Oh, Gavin Newsom, I thought they wanted to put a wrecking ball to the 20th century. They want to put a wrecking ball to the 19th century. It's not an 1864 law. It was recodified three times. I think he said three times. Most recently in 1977. In 1977, they recodified it. What do you mean recodified? They just changed a couple of the words around here and there just to make it more relevant to today. Right. Just some of the language. That's it. But it was the same law. 1977 with a Democrat governor and a Democrat House and a Democrat senator, a Senate, and one of those Arizona representatives who voted for the 1977 ban on abortion, which outlawed abortion except for life of the mother. One of those Democrats who voted to ban abortion in 1977. She's 81 and she's in the Arizona Senate today. She's still there. So don't listen to the media. It's such a great story. That's why I'm so happy we got to talk to this guy and get that type of insight. That's the type of insight you get when you talk to local people like this. It's not an 1864 law. It's a 1977 law that the Democrats supported. It's no more an 1864 law than any other law that has its roots from a long time ago, which is like every law. So the end of the story is that Arizona State House is 60 people, 31 Republican, 29 Democrats. The Democrats got three Republicans to vote with him. And one of them said that he's against abortion, but for political reasons, he's like, hey, man, we got to take this off the table. Just let the Democrats kill babies, and then we could put this issue to rest already, and we can move on. That's the play. So now it's going to go on the ballot. So they repealed it. They repealed the abortion ban, and now it's going to go on the ballot in November, 40 weeks right now. That's what's on the table in Arizona. It's going to pull out a lot of Democrats who maybe otherwise weren't going to vote. It's going to pull a lot of perhaps moderates in that direction, and will affect the outcome of the entire presidential election as well. This is Bill Maher. Let me play the woman in the beginning of this, actually. Here it is.
It's crazy. Is at a time when America is facing so many huge geopolitical threats, where there's a huge tech revolution going on, where the economy is faced with all kinds of challenges, the idea that you're fighting an election around this issue seems to be, you know, just strange. Back to the 19th century.
Well, not if you believe it's murder. You know, that's why I don't understand the 15-week thing. Or the Trump's plan is, let's leave it to the states. You mean, so killing babies is okay in some states? Like, I can respect the absolutist position. I really can. I scold the left on when they say, oh, you know what? They just hate women, people who aren't pro-life, pro-choice. They don't hate women. They just made that up. They think it's murder. And it kind of is. I'm just okay with that. I am. I mean, there's 8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on that. What?
That's quite harsh, Bill.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not
Is
sure
that
you're
not your
much.
Position if you're pro-choice?
Isn't that mainly because you don't like children? I mean,
yeah,
no,
exactly.
No. I mean, but if you are, you said you're pro-choice. Mm. That's your position, too.
Mm. Yeah,
okay, so this is such an interesting moment. To hear someone on the left say that, it's refreshing, I suppose, to be honest. But you could hear even his own people, his own audience, were aghast at that being said out loud. They were all like, listen to this sound.
8 billion people in the world. I'm sorry, we won't miss you. That's my position on what?
That's quite harsh, Bill.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, quite harsh, but like that's exactly their position. Bill's right. That's 100% your position. He just said it out loud. One last part. Here's Piers Morgan.
I do respect people who completely disagree on this. It is one of those issues. You know, they always say to English people, don't come to America and start talking about guns and abortion.
Yeah.
So here we go. But I think it's something I can respect the other side of this. Absolutely. But what I think I don't respect quite so much with Trump is that he's clearly danced a complete U-turn on this. And I think it's for political reasons. He did it in 2016 to get the evangelicals with him. He said, I'm going to pack the court. I'm going to get Miss Dunning to overturn Roe versus Wade. So they all came with him. And I think now he feels he's got them. And now you're seeing him. And again, I say, look, I don't support what he's doing, but I do understand the political reasons he's doing it. And I think it could be quite effective, actually, in neutralizing what is becoming a massive banana skin for the party. And I think that's what he's recognized, and he's getting ahead of it. I think it could be work.
I've never heard the term banana skin. But here, this is why I love this clip so much. To hear Bill Maher and Piers Morgan talk so lovingly about pro-lifers. I've never heard the left speak so with such admiration for pro-life people. It was last week. Pro-lifers wanted to enslave women and destroy their lives, and it was The Handmaid's Tale. And now it's, well, they're very principled, loving people. the pro-lifers. They're, right, he's talking about the people who are against all abortion. It's like, well, they're consistent. They're consistent. They're good people. They want what's best forever. They believe it's murder, and they firmly believe that, and they're acting on that. Like, that is so good. So one of the aspects of Trump derangement syndrome is you have to be against what Trump says no matter what. No matter what. Trump could say his favorite food is ice cream, and you have to be against ice cream. There'll be all these think pieces about how ice cream is racist, and the slaves used to make ice cream for their white masters, and that's like the genesis of ice cream is some slave-related thing or whatever, and ice cream's bad, right? It doesn't matter. Whatever Trump says, you have to be the opposite. Trump with COVID is the perfect example. So here Trump comes out and says, hey, I'm going to come out in the middle. I'm going to do the middle of abortion. States decide, okay? We're going to do the middle of it. And the Trump derangement syndrome people, they have to. It's a rule. They have to come out and say, no, the middle is bad. They have to come out and say, no, the middle is bad. The middle is hypocritical. The middle is wishy-washy. You got to be one or the other. You got to be all murder like me. I'm for all murder, says Bill Maher. Or you got to be no abortion at all. And I respect those no abortion at all people. Are you kidding me? Last week, you called us the worst people on the planet. But I'm glad those are the two choices now. And that's what Trump did. Trump said, Trump put the ground in the middle. So now the middle is no good. You got to be all abortion or all life. And I'm down with those choices. That's great. Pick one. Trump was able to get the abortion fanatics in the media to praise pro-lifers. Did you hear that? I just played it. Did you hear it? Trump got the abortion fanatics to praise pro-life people. That is quite spectacular. Last week, you go talk to one of these lefties. You say you're pro-life. They would call you the worst things imaginable. Now they'll say, hey, I respect that you firmly believe your position, that it's murder, and you stand by that. Good for you. Not like that wishy-washy Trump over there. It's great. Is that 4D chess? I don't know. These lefties have never, never once spoken a positive word about pro-life people. But because they can now use that as a way to criticize Trump, they took it. Just fine by me. But again, back to that silence. It's hard to hear truth. It's hard to hear it, especially something like this. That crowd is very uncomfortable at the truth of abortion. I've never heard it so quiet. Welcome back to Breitbart News Daily. I took a bunch of phone calls on this after we talked to the senator who says that we should maybe call in the National Guard on these protesters. Here's his argument. Senator Tom Cotton, the senator from Arkansas, is here. Senator, how are you, sir?
Hey, Mike. Good to be back on with you.
Yeah, good to talk to you. So what are you calling for in D.C.?
Well, Mike, what I'm calling for is the local authorities to restore law and order on the campus of George Washington University. Like in so many of campuses, you have these left-wing fanatics setting up encampments, celebrating Hamas, a foreign terrorist organization, interfering with students going to class, now interfering with students trying to take exams, Jewish students being threatened on campus. The authorities at GW actually asked the local DC police to come into campus. The police, of course, were ready to do so, the frontline officers. And then Muriel Bowser, the mayor, and her senior police leadership told them to stand down because it wouldn't be a good look to have police officers clearing out these criminal fanatics who are out there celebrating Hamas. I'm calling for the mayor to do her job, to restore law and order in the streets of her city, to make sure that Jewish students are not facing harassment and persecution in a nascent pogrom. And if she won't do it, Mike, it's just another example of why D.C. is not a state and should never be a state.
Mm. All right, let me play some devil's advocate here, Senator. Senator, what's the big deal? It's just some students setting up some tents. Who cares? Why? You're making it a bigger deal than it is.
They're all violating the law because they've been told that they can't be present there. There are standing laws or regulations against their presence. They are also violating university rules and regulations on almost every one of these campuses by threatening and intimidating Jewish students. I've seen reports from Jewish students on campus saying that they can no longer study safely in the library or even in their dormitory. They're worried about not doing well in final exams, which are coming up. You've seen video probably on UCLA's campus of students wearing pro-Hamas headdress, physically blockading the doors to classrooms so Jewish students can't enter, just like Nazi brown shirts did in the 1930s. And meanwhile, the so-called adults on these campuses or local authorities like Mira Bowser won't lift a finger to stop this, to actually restore law and order, to ensure that students have a safe and peaceful environment in which to attend classes and study for final exams, or take steps to rid their campuses of these anti-Semitic fanatics.
Well, they let these people in the universities in the first place as students, or just let
these people in many cases run the universities. If you look at Columbia University's faculty out there locking arms to protect all of their pro-Hamas students.
Is this a little bit of a Breyer's rabbit, Senator? Maybe they want you to send in the National Guard because they think it'll help in their optics.
No, I mean, most Americans or most normal Americans are decent people. They don't have a hard time distinguishing between the good guys and the bad guys in Israel, in the war between Israel and Hamas. And I think most Americans are shocked that the authorities are not going in there to clear out these encampments or pull students out who are trespassing in buildings. I mean, again, you can see that happening in places like University of Florida where they're not tolerating it. In fact, I don't think there's a single pro-Hamas encampment on any campus that has an SEC football championship banner. Hey, you can't say that about some of America's most prestigious or so-called prestigious universities.
Yeah, but let's not insult the Columbia University football program, Senator. You know, come on, that's not fair. What about this argument, Senator? Maybe we should let these campuses reap what they've sown. Columbia admits these students. They've hired these professors, as you mentioned. These students are literally saying, burn it down. Who cares? Let them burn it down.
So I can understand that point of view, and these universities in some cases are getting what they deserve, not just from having admitted all of these pro-Hamas left-wing Americans, or for that matter, taking in a bunch of foreign students because they'll pay full tuition who are sympathetic to Hamas. But we shouldn't forget that even when hundreds of these students are out in these encampments, there are thousands of students not there who are in the library, who are in the laboratory, who are in the classroom trying to do their work, trying to study to get good grades so they can graduate and go out and be productive citizens. And they deserve much better than what these university administrators and local Democratic politicians are doing.
Yeah. They're going to say, we know because they've already said it, but if they what you want to do, Senator, you're militarizing. Here we are peacefully protesting, and you're militarizing the situation. You're just like the Israeli oppressors against the Palestinian people. You're treating us just the same way.
Well, first off, a lot of these pro-Hamas fanatics don't exactly look like they spend a lot of time in the gym. I'm not sure that it would need to be militarized if the local Democratic politicians would simply let the police forces do their job and to clear out these encampments. And if they would do their job to make sure that they don't have pro-Hamas lunatics on their campuses as well. But if in certain places you don't have enough police, or the local Democratic politicians won't do their job, that's part of the reason why governors have a National Guard under their command. And I would remind all your listeners, Mike, that none other than Dwight D. Eisenhower, between his time as Supreme Allied Commander and President of the United States, was the president of Columbia University. What do we think Ike would have done if you had pro-Hamas militants intimidating Jewish students, refusing to let them go to class? We don't even have to speculate. It's exactly what he did in 1957 as president in my own state when you had racist Democratic politicians who refused to allow black students to go to Little Rock Central. He federalized the National Guard and made sure that they were there to protect those black students, not to prevent them from going to classes, which is what you have happening in places like UCLA today.
I made the mistake, Senator, a while back of thinking that what happened in the college campus bubble stayed in the bubble, and then they graduate and get smacked in the face with reality and wise up. Right? I thought that was true. You were a part of one of the most revealing moments in my political life when you wrote that editorial for the New York Times saying, call in the troops. And the New York Times, or the young people, especially the New York Times, freaked out. It was like a college campus. It was, they were running the New York Times now like it was a college campus. What lesson did you learn, and should we all have learned from that bizarre moment?
You're right, Mike, that what happens on these campuses, especially at so-called prestigious universities and colleges, doesn't stay on the campus, because those campuses are major opinion, trend, fashion, fad setters for the nation. And they are especially so at places like the New York Times. You know, at a place like University, you're going to have a lot of students graduate and go off into good jobs at Walmart or Tyson or home building companies or local banks, go back to the family farms and so forth. But when you have a bunch of students graduating from Columbia and Yale and Oberlin going off to become 23-year-old social media editors for the New York Times, it does begin to resemble a college campus. Of course, that's why so much of left-wing discourse in this country is so polluted now, because it's been taken over by the kind of woke ideology that has prevailed on campus for years. It's how you get the demented moral compass that leads you to believe that Israel is the oppressors and Hamas is the oppressed.
Yeah. This question here about, you know, what role does a U.S. senator have in all this? I mean, right now you're just calling for the National Guard to be sent. You can't do it. I'm thinking of two things, though, that maybe a Senate does have a role in. And I'm concerned about the student visas. Like, it's already in the law that you can't be on a student visa, come here and praise Hamas. Like, that's already a thing. And then I'm concerned about the number one foreign funder of our universities, or donor to our universities, is Qatar, which is home of all the Hamas terrorist leaders. What role does the U.S. Senate perhaps have in these two things?
Well, first, to be precise, I'm only calling for the National Guard to be used if necessary, and I don't think it should be necessary. Campus police, and certainly campus police augmented by local police, should be more than enough if they're allowed to by Democratic politicians and college administrators to clear out these encampments and restore law and order for peaceful, law-abiding students. What more can the Senate do? Under Chuck Schumer, we may not be doing a lot, but under new management in January, or for that matter, the House of Representatives right now, we can investigate a lot of the very matters you just raised, like who is funding these encampments. They're not sleeping out there under trash bags. They've got tents that cost hundreds of dollars. There are credible reports that money is coming from places like the Soros Foundation, like the Rockefeller Foundation, or perhaps even foreign militant funding as well. As you say, it's already the law that students can't come here on visas and celebrate Hamas, a foreign terrorist organization. Every one of these students on these campuses who are celebrating Hamas or celebrating Hezbollah should have their visa revoked and should be sent home immediately. And for that matter, at private universities, I would kick off students from private universities too who do that. They have no right. They have no First Amendment right against a private university like Columbia or Yale to celebrate Hamas. And students have had their offers of admissions revoked for much less grievous crimes, such as offending left-wing sensibilities and teenage social media posts. And the Department of Education, Department of Justice has a legal responsibility to protect the civil rights of all students on these campuses, to include Jewish students who are facing harassment and persecution. All these things are actions that the federal government should take. Now, if Joe Biden won't take it, Donald Trump and his new attorney general, secretary of education, I bet will in January.
Look forward to that. Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, thanks for your time, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
The letter that the senator wrote is on Breitbart.com.
I'm American made.
We got Senator Ron Johnson on tomorrow's show. We're also reaching out to the Attorney General of Missouri, who's thrown his hat in the ring on this New York trial against Trump. We'll talk about how on tomorrow's show. Spread the word.